The expansion to Horizon Zero Dawn, The Frozen Wilds, releases today. I was fortunate to get an early review copy of the expansion and have been playing it for a little while now. And I'm sure if you listen to this show, you know at this point how highly I regard Horizon Zero Dawn. It will definitely be one of my top games of the year. I think it's one of the best open world role-playing games ever made. One of the best story action games ever made. It is a tremendous culmination of a lot of great ideas we've seen other games do, but refined, brought together in an incredible package with an awesome narrative. I think Horizon Zero Dawn is one of the best games of all time. So I was very excited to return to that universe with more content, and more content in the same year that the first game came out. More single-player story content, an entirely new area to explore on the map, more missions, more quests, more stuff to upgrade, a new higher level cap, all of that good stuff that you want out of good single-player DLC. And yes, The Frozen Wilds is more of the same. It suffers a bit from a lack of narrative pull. The first game, the original game, the base game, had such a strong narrative, and to the game's credit, had really a beginning, middle, and end. It ends with a crescendo, and while there are some loose threads, it mostly gives us closure. It mostly gives us real answers to big questions, and it fulfills Aloy's destiny, and we understand what she was, who she was, where she came from, and what she was trying to do, both in the past and the present. So any more story added onto that adventure feels a little less than, right? It simply can't be about those same things. It can't feel as personal to Aloy as the original game. And that's just going to be what DLC is going to be. But even working with that disadvantage, I think the game does create some compelling new problems for Aloy to tackle, some compelling new enemies, and some interesting new cultures that she's experiencing. She goes north into what's called the Cut, which is this big frozen new area that's more desolate, a little harsher, and has some new, more powerful enemies. This is content that is designed for players that have gotten very, very far in the game, if not completed it. So it's not something for new players to jump right into. And there is new challenge. These new enemies, these new mechanical beasts that you will be taking down are challenging, are difficult. I feel like the side quests in the new expansion are even a little more robust and filled out than the base games, and which were already excellent. I feel like the area is equally as beautiful and interesting to explore as the first game. I think the new upgrades that Aloy gets aren't really very compelling or very interesting. She doesn't get brand new abilities. They're just sort of quality of life improvements that I think are appreciated, like the idea of being able to gather resources while you remain on your mount is much very welcome, not having to jump off the mount and jump back on in order to just pick some medicinal herbs. But it's not big, great, sweeping changes to the way Aloy plays, which would have been, I think, more surprising and cool. It's really more of the same, but the same is so good, and the fundamental gameplay loop of Horizon Zero Dawn is so strong that I can't help but love this. And I think it's a great reward for players that loved Horizon Zero Dawn and just want more. Welcome to Newest, Latest, Best, the quick daily show to keep you in the know with all of the newest information, latest releases, and the very best that games have to offer. I'm Jeff Cannata, and today is Wednesday, November 8th, 2017. Let's talk about the Xbox One X. I got mine yesterday and spent most of the day putting it through its paces, and I gotta say, I came away fairly impressed with what Microsoft has managed to put together. It is clearly the most powerful console in the world, We know that from tech specs, from all of the marketing leading up to it. But in actuality, in practice, in real world environments, it does feel that way. Let's start from the beginning. Unboxing it was a very pleasant experience. You pop open the box and you find yourself presented with these long cards, these long strips. One is a quick start guide, and the other two get you into Xbox Live and Microsoft Game Pass, should you be interested in that. And then the box itself, not cluttered, easy to unpack. The Xbox One X is surprisingly small and compact. I had an Xbox One launch unit. I hadn't upgraded to the S, so I was comparing it to the launch unit, which is a big box, big blocky box. And the Xbox One X is a smaller blocky box. They're both blocky boxes. The X, of course, encourages you to put it on its end, like the old Xbox 360. My home entertainment setup doesn't really lend itself to on-end standing for my console, so I didn't do that. But I was glad to see that it had a much smaller footprint than its old launch cousin. And even more delighted to note that it doesn't have the power brick. So even though the Xbox One launch unit was a much larger, bulkier box, it also required that big, bulky power brick to be plugged in between your power cord and your console. Xbox One X does not need that. Plugs just with a simple power cord from the back of the box into your outlet. So it was great to clear up that space in my home entertainment center. And plugged my HDMI cord into my 4K 60 hertz slot in the back of my HDTV and booted it up. Now, Microsoft makes it extremely easy to transfer all of your information from your existing Xbox Ones to the new X. I had already invested in an external hard drive because back when I was playing Fallout 4 heavily and those long load times on Xbox One were getting frustrating, I had recognized that the external hard drive, actually, if you loaded the game onto an SSD and plugged it in through USB 3, it actually lowered the load times quite a bit. So I had invested in an external hard drive already and loaded many of my games onto that. You can also very easily, with one click, transfer all your settings to the external hard drive. And then, if you plug the external hard drive in your Xbox One X before booting it, it automatically looks at that and loads all the settings from that hard drive. So it couldn't be simpler to much simpler than upgrading from my PlayStation 4 to PlayStation 4 Pro. It didn't take anything other than, of course, that investment into the external hard drive, which, you know, cost me some money. But it booted up great. I have to say, one of the things that impresses me most about Xbox One X is how quickly that machine turns on and off. It is lickety-split, boots up in a flash. You turn on your TV, you turn on your Xbox One, and it is no time. It gets right to the menu and lets you start jumping into your game. I love that. I felt like the Xbox One took a second to boot. PlayStation 4 takes more than a second. It's a little annoying how long the PlayStation 4 takes from off to on, in my opinion. But Xbox One X really just jumps to life, which is pretty nice. It did not auto-select 4K, even though my television had that capability, perhaps because my settings from the previous system were set to 1080p. But very soon it said, hey, we've noticed you're on 4K. Would you like to adjust those? So it prompted me. It just didn't prompt me right away. And it looks and feels great. I had forgotten, quite frankly, how much I enjoy the Xbox infrastructure. I had been playing so much PlayStation of late that I really hadn't turned on my Xbox One in quite a while. And I'm reminded how much easier everything seems to be on Xbox. This is all anecdotal and my personal hardware, my personal experience. I'm sure a lot of you have the opposite view. But for me, The way my Astro A50 headset just plugs and plays on the Xbox, it doesn't work that way on PlayStation 4. I'm always fighting it. I'm always having to adjust settings. With Xbox One X, I plugged my A50s in, and it just automatically muted my television and put the audio through the headset. It just all works great. Online just all works. I just feel like everything's a little simpler and more streamlined on Xbox One X compared to my PlayStation 4 Pro. And the games look great. Primarily what I've been playing all yesterday was Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. And I played that game a lot at events leading up to it. Listeners of the show will know because I've mentioned it over and over and over again. And always I was playing on PCs, which you would assume are very high-end and had the game playing at its maximum setting. I think it looks better on Xbox One than my memory of playing it at those events. Now, of course, again, anecdotal, and it wasn't one-to-one, and it was separated by many weeks. but I am blown away by how silky smooth and gorgeous it looks in 4K on my big HD TV playing on Xbox One X. I'm going to be playing more games. I'm excited to dive back into Halo 5 Guardians now that it's in 4K. I want to see how that game looks. I remember it being so gorgeous. I want to revisit that game and Gears of War and some others. But my early feelings on Xbox One X is that it really is very impressive. Everything is fast and smooth. The load times are quick. And it is gorgeous. The games are gorgeous. Now, is it a necessity for everybody? No. It is definitely a luxury console. It is intended for people who have 4K TVs. But if you are able to afford it, I feel like you will get your money's worth. I'm certainly pleased as of right now. And I'm very, very impressed with how powerful the box seems, how quick everything moves, and how great the games look on it so far. All right, let's talk about some sales. Some interesting numbers came out in the last couple of days, including the fact that Grand Theft Auto V just became the all-time best-selling video game in the U.S., period. Grand Theft Auto has now shipped 85 million units since its release in 2013. That is a staggering number. 85 million units of Grand Theft Auto V. It's still selling like gangbusters. It is the cash cow. It is the golden goose. Whatever the analogy you want to make is, it's making a lot of people a lot of money, mostly Take-Two executives. But man, what an accomplishment. In the investor call, Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick reiterated that there will be a highly anticipated new title from one of its biggest franchises. I suspect that's Red Dead Redemption 2, although it may be a new surprise game. And we've been talking a lot on this show about the potential death of single-player games, the fact that visceral closing and other things have pointed to a de-emphasis on single-player games. Zelnick acknowledged that single player is, quote, currently under pressure right now. He said that formats appear to come in style and go out of style, and that what really drives success is quality and excitement. He said, I wouldn't rule out the possibility of seeing big single player hits come forth from us and from other people. Which is encouraging, and certainly Grand Theft Auto as a franchise, Red Dead Redemption as a franchise, the big Rockstar games across the board have emphasized their single player. But I would argue that 85 million unit sold number comes primarily from the strength of Grand Theft Auto's multiplayer. I think it's kind of obvious when you look at the emphasis in the multiplayer community on GTA 5 and how much it's raking in, how many people are playing the multiplayer. I think they come in the door for the single player, perhaps, and then they stay for the multiplayer. I think that's what makes it have such a long tail 4 years after its release. So to say that single player is alive and well based on GTA 5's numbers, I think is a misinterpretation of the data. Either way, what an incredible accomplishment for Take-Two and Rockstar. Meanwhile, Ubisoft has a lot to be happy about. Assassin's Creed Origins has barely been out for 2 weeks, and it's already passed Assassin's Creed Syndicate in sales growth. According to Ubisoft, it has benefited from a 100% sales growth for Assassin's Creed Origins compared to Syndicate in 2015. They made the difficult decision back then to take a year off with the Assassin's Creed franchise, which had been on an annual release schedule, and it seems to have benefited them greatly. I also think it's a better game, much, much better game. I think it's the best game in the Assassin's Creed franchise for my money, and I really hope that the kinds of gameplay we're seeing in Origins carry forward into the Assassin's Creed franchise in the future. But good for Ubisoft. It's selling really, really well. Ubisoft also noted that the Nintendo Switch has been a big part of their success as well. The Nintendo Switch made up 19% of Ubisoft's game sales this quarter, which is pretty impressive. That's just below the Xbox One. The PlayStation 4 was the biggest portion of their sales at 31%. Xbox One was 20%. The Switch was 19%. And then the PC came in lowest at just 15%. But this is good news in the sense that the Switch is such a new, fresh console. And it also points to how great a game and how well-received Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle was, which still is a game that I absolutely adore. And Yves Guillemot and Miyamoto have been buddies for a long time. Ubisoft has always come out strong supporting Nintendo consoles, even when it didn't make financial sense or ended up being, in retrospect, a big mistake. Of course, the Wii they supported in a big way. The Wii U they supported in a big way. Zombie U was one of the big launch titles from Ubisoft. And Ubisoft has always been on the forefront of Nintendo launching new consoles, even when those new consoles seem to be a poison pill for third parties. And it didn't always seem like the right choice for Ubisoft. This time, it has yielded results. Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle came out to great reviews from myself and others, as well as it looks like pretty hot sales. So Ubisoft doing well by the Switch. The Switch doing well by Ubisoft.